It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. For decades after the horrific events of the Holocaust, there was rumored to be an escape tunnel in the Ponar Forest in Lithuania. 80 prisoners were estimated to have dug for 76 nights before attempting to escape. The story had never been confirmed until recently, when an international team of excavators traveled to the forest and began using radar technology. Their search for the tunnel is being chronicled by the PBS program Nova. It will air a documentary about the search in 2017. One of the leaders of that team was Philip Reeder, Dean of Environmental Sciences at Duquesne University's Bayer School of Natural and Environmental Sciences. He joins us now in studio. Philip Reeder, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Very happy to be here.
And you can join the conversation with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. As with so many Holocaust stories, Dr. Reeder, we're talking about a terrible place in Lithuania where 100,000 people, most of them Jews, were murdered. And yet you say that this is a story of hope. Explain what you mean here.
Well, amidst all the terrible things that went on at the Holocaust, there were some hopeful moments. And really one of these could be found in the Ponar Forest in Lithuania. And it's the fact that 100,000 people were killed at that spot. 80 people were charged with actually digging up the bodies of the people who had been murdered to then burn them and rebury them because the Russians were at the doorstep and the Nazis were afraid of being accused of war crimes if the Russians found what they did. And these 80 people sort of knew their fate, that when their job was done, then they were going to be killed as well. So they hatched a plan, and the plan was to dig this tunnel. And I'm sure they had hope for 76 days as they dug that tunnel, and they dug over 100 feet out of the enclosure where they were held.
And they were doing this shackled and with their, largely with their bare hands, although I guess they had some spoons and maybe some other things.
Right, yeah. They were all shackled together, through all 80 were shackled together, and they were digging with spoons. One of their big problems was what to do with the dirt that they were removing from the tunnel. They couldn't place it in their bunker because it would be seen that there was fresh deposits of dirt in the bunker. So they actually had to clandestinely place it around the site as they went out to their daily task of digging up the bodies and burning the bodies.
And these Lithuanian Jews, the method that was used to kill so many of them, this was different from what we were seeing in other concentration camps, primarily because of the fact that the Russians were closing in, I would imagine. It was, while there were mass shootings in other concentration camps, there were, in other camps, there were gas chambers, there were other methods used. But here, it became, for the Nazis, a matter of expediency.
Yeah, and actually, what happened at Ponar predated a lot of the extermination camps. It was July 1941, and the extermination camps in eastern Poland had not yet been established. The Nazis came into Lithuania. They ghettoed the Jews into two ghettos in Vilnius, the capital, and they had to figure out a way to murder them. And conveniently, the Soviets had begun the construction of a fuel depot out in the forest, out in Ponar, and dug these very deep holes. But then as World War II broke out and the Nazis began to take more and more territory, and it was imminent that the Nazis were going to take Lithuania, the Russians left, and what they left behind were these very large holes. So the Nazis utilized those features as a killing field of sort to take the Lithuanian Jews out there on supposed work details, of which they never returned from. A very personal way of killing, because they basically had to face their killers because they were put into these pits and then individually shot while they were in these pits. The extermination camps in Poland actually came after that. So this was sort of the precursor to what happened at Sobibor, Treblinka, and Belzec, which were the three extermination camps in eastern Poland.
And in the minds of the Nazis, this was necessitated by the fact that they were having to retreat. They were the Russians put up much more of a fight than I think that the Germans had anticipated. And they made the same classic Napoleonic mistake of trying to fight the Russians in Russia in Soviet-held territory in the dead of winter.
Right.
Which ended up being a strategic mistake. So they were in retreat by this time.
Yes. The killings at Ponar stopped in July 1944. So, yes, the Russians were at the doorstep. The Nazis that remained panicked and hatched a plan about how to cover up their atrocities. And the method they came up with was to gather up these 80 Jews that still remained, to bring them out to the forest, and then to have them work as this burning brigade of digging up the 100,000 bodies, burning them, and then reburying the ashes mixed with sand in various pits around the Ponar site.
What these prisoners did was truly amazing, to have made the progress they did. I mean, they were able to dig a tunnel in these 76 days, in roughly over 2 months or about 2.5 months. So then it became a matter of figuring out when to escape. Tell me how they coordinated their escape attempt, which I believe was April 15th, the last night of Passover.
Right. Yeah, it was the last night of Passover. Something about Lithuania is that it's very far north. People don't realize how far north it is. It's about that same latitude as Moscow. So during the summer of the year, so in April, the days start becoming very, very long. I just returned, and in July, the sun goes down at 11:30 at night and comes up at 3:30 in the morning. So there's a lot of daylight. In April, the day would be shorter than that, but it would still be a long day. And the end of Passover coincided with one of the longer nights, and it just happened to be a dark night. So that was selected as the night that they were going to try to escape.
Presumably under the cover of darkness.
Right.
And I want to get into a little bit more of the details of the escape here, but I want to talk about Vilnius because it is it has been characterized as the Jerusalem of Europe, with so many, such a large hotbed of Jewish culture before the Nazis showed up.
Right. Yeah, and that's true, 100,000 Jews in that area. The population of Jews there now is very small, just enough to populate one synagogue. There were many, many synagogues during the height of Vilnius and the height of Jewish culture in Vilna, to the point, as you pointed out, that it was called the Jerusalem of Lithuania.
And so then the Holocaust happens, and these 100,000 Jews are murdered, and the Nazis are trying to cover their tracks. They force 80 prisoners to dig areas where these bodies can be buried. The prisoners clandestinely end up creating this tunnel, and then the escape attempt happens on April 15th. Describe the attempt and what happened.
So you have to remember that they're all chained together. As they were digging in the tunnel, they were chained together. They got to the point where they thought they were outside the barbed wire. They were in one of these pits, and they had a bunker inside the pit, and then the pit was encircled with barbed wire. So they had gotten to a point where they thought they were outside the barbed wire and started to dig up towards the surface and poked at the surface with an iron bar that they had, and then eventually actually poked through to the surface so that the lead digger, the person first in line, could actually see the sky and the stars. And once they did that, this is based on testimony from that particular digger, once they did that, they knew it was time to go. So necessarily they hadn't planned to go that night, but it was a perfect night because it was such a dark night. And then chained together one by one, they filed out of the hole beyond the barbed wire, and then they had to remove their shackles. And from the account
How did they do that?
From the account I read, they basically picked the locks with a nail file. And as they were doing that, they were spotted by the German guards. 11 were out of the tunnel and had picked the locks and ran off into the forest. And others were still shackled together and were trying to pick the locks. And then the Germans came upon them and began to shoot them. And then whoever was in the tunnel retreated back into the bunker again. So then in reality, I believe 12 actually escaped into the forest, and then 11 actually survived the war.
And are any of these people alive today?
No.
How did you end up getting involved in approaching this?
I'm part of a multidisciplinary research team, and actually we've been working together since 2000. And we've worked at various places all around the world. And what we do is we combine geophysics with spatial analysis, with archaeology, and then with history and archive studies. So we have experts that are in all those different areas.
So decades later, the search for this tunnel is initiated.
Yes. It actually began last year. We were asked by an archaeologist from the Israel Antiquities Authority, John Seligman, if we wanted to participate in a project in Lithuania. And actually the main focus of the project was working at the Great Synagogue of Vilnius, which is the largest synagogue, or was the largest synagogue in Eastern Europe. It was sacked by the Nazis, subsequently knocked down by the Soviets when they took over after World War II, and essentially erased from history. And John Seligman's idea was, well, it can't be erased from history. It was such an important place. And he asked us to come in and bring in our geophysical equipment and to see if we could start to map out the perimeter of where the synagogue used to be. So we did that. And then as an aside, last summer, we went to the Ponar Forest as well. And we already knew something about the story of the Ponar Forest. But then we met with the curator of the museum that's there. He gave us the whole story. And we thought, well, what a fascinating site. And it's always, working as part of this research group, it's always sort of humbling to think that you can either write history or rewrite history. And this presented a great opportunity to combine science and archaeology and archival studies together to sort of maybe write the history of this escape and the history of Ponar, or in some cases to rewrite it. There was an excavation that was undertaken to try to find the tunnel in 2004 by a Lithuanian archaeologist, and he was actually successful at finding the entrance to the tunnel, but he didn't do any more than that. So essentially what we did is we added to his work. So we then formulated this plan after the work last summer to come back this summer and to field a full team of researchers doing ground-penetrating radar, electro-resistivity tomography, which are two geophysical techniques which allow you to map the subsurface without disturbing what's there. And then I do spatial analysis where I draw maps to try to pull all that information together into a coherent fashion that is understandable not only to scientists but to government officials and to the general public as well. And, you know, this time we were highly successful at meeting the goals, one of which was to find the location of the escape tunnel. And the other was to find if there were more of these large pits filled with now ashes and sand based upon the burning of the bodies at the Ponar site, which were unknown. And actually we did. We found another pit as well that we estimate has 10,000 human remains in it that was previously unknown.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Philip Reeder, Dean of Environmental Sciences at Duquesne University's Bayer School of Natural and Environmental Sciences. He was part of a team of an international team of excavators that traveled to the Ponar Forest in Lithuania to search for a tunnel that was used by prisoners in Lithuania, prisoners of the Nazis, some of whom managed to escape and survived the war decades ago. And the story of the search for this tunnel is being chronicled by the PBS program Nova. It will air a documentary about the search in 2017. I think that from how you've described your approach, some people might have formulated an idea about this, but one of the questions that, of course, comes to mind is, as you do this excavation, how do you avoid disturbing these mass graves of thousands and thousands of people?
Right. Actually, Jewish law forbids disturbing a grave, and we're very cognizant of that. And even though we're in Lithuania, we still follow the Jewish law of not disturbing graves. So that's really where this non-invasive technology comes into play. When we do the electroresistivity tomography, essentially what we do is we lay lines of metal spikes that are driven into the ground across the landscape, usually on the order of about 100 meters long. And then electrodes, they are hooked up with electricity, and electricity is shot into the ground. And essentially, the instrumentation is able to interpret the reflected image from that and draw a picture of what's in the subsurface. So we don't actually have to physically excavate anything. In terms of the ground-penetrating radar, that actually emits FM radio waves into the ground. So those waves are transmitted, and then a receiver receives those waves, and the same thing. It paints a picture of what's in the subsurface without having to dig it up. So we actually didn't have to do any excavation at Ponar, and the type of permit we had didn't allow us to do excavation. The next step of that is for us to write our report, which we're working on now, submit that to the Lithuanian government, and then it's up to them what they want to do. From the preliminary discussions we've had with them, they certainly want to memorialize the burial pit that we found. Of the, I believe there's 7 burial pits right now that are known there, and they've all been memorialized. So this one will be memorialized as well, which basically means constructing a wall around it, cleaning it up a bit because it looks like the forest right now, and then a monument will be put there to tell people what's actually there. And then in terms of the tunnel, from the preliminary discussions we've heard, they are going to sort of create a museum exhibit around that to memorialize the burning brigade and the diggers, and to excavate a very small section of the tunnel, probably put a glass viewing port over it, and then tell the story of these burning brigade and these hopeful escape that they made.
And we've got about a minute left here. You say this is a different kind of history from what you're used to.
Yeah, I'm used to working on projects that basically deal with much more ancient history. Actually, last year I was on this program based on a fresh discovery we had made last summer at the Greek Orthodox Church of the Annunciation in Nazareth in Israel, where we discovered a 4th century mosaic floor, which we thought might have been the original floor from the original Church of the Annunciation, which was ordered to be constructed by Emperor Constantine's mother in 363, something like that. Actually be going back there in a few weeks to continue that project as well.
So rather than ancient history, this is something that is not even 100 years old, but obviously a very important thing to find.
Right. Near history is just as important as ancient history if it's going to sort of drop off the radar of everyone and everyone's going to forget about it.
We've been talking with Philip Reeder, Dean of Environmental Sciences at Duquesne University's Bayer School of Natural and Environmental Sciences, part of a team that traveled to the Ponar Forest in Lithuania to find an escape tunnel that was used by prisoners of the Nazis during World War II. Philip Reeder, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Coming up, as Pittsburgh celebrates its bicentennial, we'll have the story of one of its oldest buildings, the Beltshoover Homestead. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.